Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, May 29th, 2020. Section A. Herman. MPD is antithesis of Minneapolis PD, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. During a community discussion Thursday night about Ty Anders' arrest 2 weeks earlier, Midland Police Chief Seth Herman rebuked comparisons to Minneapolis police, saying his officers are the antithesis of that department. Herman's remarks followed comments by a resident who expressed concern the climate of the Midland Police Department was moving in the direction of Minneapolis police. Four officers in Minneapolis were fired earlier this week after video surfaced of a white officer kneeling on the neck of George Floyd, a black man who later died. "What happened in Minneapolis is an atrocity," Herman said. "You're not going to find an officer with the Midland Police Department who doesn't look at that with disgust and anger." He said the department in Minneapolis is the antithesis of what we are. Mayor Patrick Payton and Mike Midland Councilman John Norman announced the town hall-style event last week after a bystander video of Anders lying in the grass as officers pointed guns at him was widely shared on social media. The video again went viral on Wednesday in the week of Floyd's death and was posted by multiple celebrities, including filmmaker Ava DuVernay and Jay-Z. Anders was charged with evading arrest, a third-degree felony, after allegedly running a stop sign and failing to immediately pull over when an officer initiated a traffic stop. Dashboard camera footage released by the City of Midland showed Anders continued for 20 seconds before pulling into a residential driveway, or two blocks, according to an arrest affidavit. He could later be heard on the footage saying he was afraid of the arresting officer. Anders' lawyer, Dallas-based civil rights attorney Justin Moore, held a press conference before the public forum calling for an independent investigation into the Midland Police Department by the Texas Rangers or FBI. He also lamented what he described as vigilante behavior by law enforcement and criticized the felony charge against Anders. "To talk about a person with felonies, it's hard for them to get employment. It's hard for them to even rent an apartment. So they endeavor to hamper Ty's life severely due to the fact that they want to cover their own butts." Moore said in a press release he and Anders would not be attending the town hall because any action towards having a discussion about what happened to Ty Anders without dismissing his felony charges is dishonest and is in bad faith. Later in Thursday's forum, Herman was asked by an attendee if he would have done anything differently than his officers in the footage of Anders' arrest. He said he would have pulled Anders out of the car, and the incident would have ended quicker and looked worse. "It probably would have ended up with a broken window and someone arrested and transported immediately," Herman said. "It would not have looked as professional as the men and women that were there that day that showed extreme patience." Speakers offer perspective on area economy, by Mella McEwen. MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Permian Basin residents may be seeking their way through the economic chaos caused by the coronavirus pandemic and crashing oil prices, but they have a lot to point to with pride. Midland-Odessa ranked fifth among the state's top 10 metropolitan statistical areas, said James Beauchamp, president of the Motran Alliance, Thursday, as he opened the virtual State of the Permian Basin webinar. Midland-Odessa came in behind Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, and San Antonio, among those with a gross domestic product of $25 billion or greater, and Midland alone would retain that rank. Even Reeves County outproduced Lubbock. Though we're seeing things as depressing, the Permian Basin has had an amazing impact, he said. I think there's a lot of good news on the horizon. Ray Perryman offered a quick dose of bad medicine when he forecast the Permian Basin will lose 35,000 jobs this year, much higher right now because we're going through the worst of it. The potential short-term loss of 100,000 jobs is not going to last that long. Acknowledging comparisons between today and the oil crash of the 1980s, Perryman said there are some differences we need to focus on. When it happens this quickly, it feels like the worst we've ever seen. We had oil prices go negative one day, but basically there are some fundamental differences that are very important. One difference is that this downturn happened almost immediately, with 25% of global oil demand wiped out in a period of 30 days by the pandemic. In the 1980s, the downturn was 5 years in the making, as high energy prices beginning in the mid-1970s following the Arab oil embargo prompted the world to reduce its energy use. We turned the thermostat down, we had the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit, we banned oil exports. This was all done because of a perceived energy shortage, he said. Today, the pandemic happened in the midst of an energy revolution fueled by the Permian's unconventional shales, with more manufacturers making more goods and energy demand growing in different ways. Those fundamentals haven't gone away, Perryman said. Although it looks similar, this could not be more different. It's very important for the folks in the Permian Basin to understand that. Now is not the time to pack up and leave. People don't need to pack up and leave. The road to economic recovery lies in critical infrastructure, said Bradley Ewing, professor of energy commerce at Texas Tech University. There's a lot to be said for how and what to do in the Permian Basin to speed up the recovery and make things better sooner for all of us, he said. Strategic investment, I mean big projects such as pipelines, storage facilities, these type of projects. Companies building something in the area has a lot of economic impact on the area, and that spreads out. That's not always realized. Strategic infrastructure investment can accelerate the pace of economic recovery and lead to a higher trend of future economic output. Ewing said he's heard the word resiliency being used frequently. It takes on new meaning in West Texas, he said. We don't have hurricanes, but we have oil booms and busts. The notion of getting back to normal and rebuilding the economy through infrastructure makes the economy more resilient. These projects are a private sector stimulus package. The private sector placing strategic investments at the right time in the right place helps the economy recover quickly. The Wink to Webster pipeline project is one example. Ewing said he has studied. The project will have a $17.9 billion economic impact, $7.3 billion for construction, and $10.6 billion during operation. That project would speed up recovery of the current Permian Basin economy by 35 weeks or so, as opposed to letting the project linger. Infrastructure projects, the ones that connect the upstream and downstream segments, reduce uncertainty, help the sector perform better, and provide stronger growth. The long-term impacts of infrastructure investment are economic growth, economic stability, and greater competitiveness on the global market. Don Evans, the former Secretary of Commerce under President George W. Bush and current chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership, said, "We're in the middle of a moment we'll always remember, a surreal moment when you think about it, as surreal to me as 9/11. I was in the middle of 9/11. I could see the Pentagon on fire from my office that day. The 45-year oil industry veteran said what has happened in the last 6 or 7 years underscores the importance of the Permian Basin, as the energy renaissance the region has led has changed the world. The Permian will continue to remain important. The Permian Basin is home to the largest secure supply of energy in the world, he said. We lose sight of that when we go through these periods. Unfortunately, we go through a downturn where we see the pain and anxiety that goes with lapsing oil prices. We've had layoffs in the Permian Basin after a surge of employment. The PSP has done surveys, so we know what kind of workforce will be needed to allow companies to execute their plans when prices recover to whatever level, $45 or $55, which I'm confident they will. One reason is the Middle East countries and Russia can't run their countries with $25 or $30 oil. That won't last. We'll get through this, Evans said. And the Permian Basin will remain the place of the most secure oil supply of oil in the world, the lowest cost-producing area of the world. These rocks are as good as you'll find in the world. Talking with the members of the PSP, I can tell you the great belief they have in the Permian Basin. They are 100% convinced it will recover, and we just have to be patient and work our way through this and get to the other side of it. And we will. Dr. Billy Phillips, Executive Vice President for Rural and Community Health at the Texas Tech University Health Science Center, said he has been asked why the pandemic happened. I can't answer that, though I could speculate. There are a lot of reasons viruses do what they do, and sometimes it's a divine thing almost. Just remember, as I talk, I'm talking about a virus we have very little experience with, yet it's an ubiquitous virus common of all of us. The 1918 flu epidemic was very high in both transmissibility and clinical severity, he said. COVID-19 may be as severe, he said, but those estimates will change as the virus is better understood through better testing and more data about those who suffered from it and those who died from it. The COVID-19 pandemic is not our first or our last rodeo. We've had a lot of flus, and we'll have more of these because the world has become more connected. We can travel around the world in a day. I can cross the globe and carry what I have with me. So get used to it, he said. Influenza pandemics will be part of global life, so we should get ready. When we make policy decisions, locally or otherwise, we need to focus on general medicine. We are and should train specialists, but we need a balance. And taking precautions, such as social distancing or wearing masks, is not a threat to liberty. We should always protect our liberty, but being concerned about our fellow man is not an act of treason. It's a good public health measure, he said. Being ignorant or in denial does not confer immunity. Dufferd, Downtown Hotel Project is on hold, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Remember the deal to transform a vacant, rundown building into a 4-star hotel in downtown Midland? It is currently on hold, District 1 Councilman Scott Dufferd told the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday. Dufferd, along with Spencer Robnett, was one of the more vocal proponents of the hotel when the council passed a nearly $40 million development deal with Midway Companies of Houston in December. Dufferd, an oil man by trade, said the city is reeling from being hit by a pair of black swan events, the oil price downturn and coronavirus pandemic, but he is more optimistic about the future compared to a few weeks ago. He said the deal is on hold as both the city and Midway react to the current economic conditions and decide on how to move forward. He said there are extensions to the current contract that both sides must work out, and at least on the city side, an abatement that needs to be done. No matter whether the former Western United Life building in the 300 block of West Texas Avenue becomes a marquee hotel or just another demolished building. The city attorney's office reported Thursday that the hotel developer has 90 days to close on the Western United Life building after it's been abated by MDC, and that the abatement work hasn't been completed yet. "The events of the past few months put everyone behind the eight ball," Dufford said. "We are talking about what we can do to not breach contracts on both sides. There are issues, and we might mutually agree to walk away from the deal. That hasn't happened yet." The agreement calls for $15 million in cash incentives, an estimated $15 million in tax abatements, other costs related to past and future improvements to the Western Life building, and $8 million for the construction of the parking garage. The construction budget is tentatively set at $75 million, Midway officials said in December. Dufford acknowledged the changes that have occurred since December when the previous council approved the deal by a 4-2 vote. "The idea of banks funding such a project comes into question, as does the makeup of the new council. The new members elected in November weren't vocal either way about the project or about letting the previous council vote on the matter." Dufford also said there is a possibility that the space on Texas Avenue becomes a parking lot if the third attempt of a luxury hotel project falls by the wayside. "Still, that would require millions of dollars for abatement and demolition. The priority here, and that with all the great things happening downtown, the last thing we need is a vacant building." Dufford referenced the new convention center and Centennial Park project. "There's a lot of energy downtown," he said. Executive director retiring after leading MCRC for 19 years. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hearstmp.com. The longtime physical therapist and executive director of Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center, Brooke Mueller, is retiring today after 26 years with the agency. She is the center's second executive director, a post she has held for 19 years. Mueller first came to Midland with her husband William and their three children in the 1980s. They left Midland but returned in 2000, which is when Mueller came back as a full-time physical therapist. At that time, she started talking to Jim Crawford, who had been executive director since MCRC's beginning. "He had been considering retirement and was looking around to see if anyone was interested," she said. "When I came in looking for a job, he suggested that I apply for it." Mueller attended physical therapy school at the University of Missouri and has been a physical therapist since 1969. "I volunteered at a hospital when I was in high school," she said. "They used to have a volunteer corps called Candy Stripers, and I joined one of our major hospitals in St. Louis. I volunteered in the physical therapy department, and that was the beginning of the story." When she applied for the executive director position, she told the board of directors she had never run a facility such as the MCRC. However, she told them she loved working there and understood the culture. "They decided I had the qualifications they were looking for," she said. Before becoming the executive director, she had owned a business in Houston and had experience as a wife, homeowner, and mother. She led committees in the community and at church, which helped her understand how to work with people. However, she lacked fundraising experience. The board of directors said, "That's all right. We've got lots of active board members who will take on that responsibility. And if you'll take care of the other things, we'll take care of the fundraising." Mueller knew she needed to understand the fundraising aspect of running the Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center. She said she immediately joined the Association of Fundraising Professionals, AFP, Midland AFP chapter has always been exceptional in providing pertinent training opportunities, seminars, and networking opportunities. The heart of the center is the needs of the children and their families, Mueller said. Midland's community is exceptional and is truly unique. Midland responds differently than any other community I've ever lived in. That was something very exciting for me to discover. Dr. Charles Younger, who is on the MCRC Board of Governors and was the medical director for 23 years, said Mueller's hard work has been apparent during her tenure, when she wore multiple hats. He said Mueller's love for children and the center has been evident throughout. The one thing you can't measure would be her heart for these children, he said. She has a true heart for the kids and a true heart and love for the center. Mary Lou Cassidy, who is on the Board of Governors, said Mueller made an easy transition at MCRC with respect to Crawford's work. She has continued to help the center grow. She is a very effective leader and also takes care of patients and boards, Cassidy said. She can raise money for the center, and when you find an executive director who can do all those things, you've found a gem. I think Brooke Miller is truly a gem. While MCRC has continued to expand over the years, its core values have stayed the same. The core of who we are and how we operate has not changed in 64 years. What has changed is the size and the size of the need. How we do therapy and meet the needs of the children has changed due to new research and evidence about how you best help a child reach their greatest potential. She said it is a Midland mindset to help people in need, especially within the community. One reason I lost my heart to Midland was because of the way the members of the community respond to the needs of the children. During her time as executive director, the center started to look at the needs of children with differing abilities and different impairments and what was needed for them to become well-rounded citizens. The center started working with partners to look at how they can set children up for a fulfilling life as adults. In 2006, they started We Are the World Camp, which is a summer camp with Mark and Bynum School. We were trying to come up with a summer activity program for the kids that would help them continue to develop their skills that they'd been working on in therapy, but in a more social context. This has been a fabulous collaboration in our community and has been very successful. As the center continued to expand, Mueller said they found the need to bring on more staff. MCRC made it a priority in 2012 to grow the development department to help raise more money to serve more children and families. That was a huge goal and was probably the turning point in taking MCRC from a nonprofit that was scraping by and doing the best we could to become a leader in the fundraising world and the therapy world, she said. We are well known throughout West Texas for both. Mueller said MCRC has totally changed her life. I never in a million years would have seen this as something that I would not only seek, but that I would also enjoy. Therapy is what we are able to do because of the work that administration, leadership, and development do to support that. This was one of those moments that I said yes, which was a good thing. MCRC physical therapist Crystal Kidd will take over as the executive director starting Monday. I'm so excited for Crystal to become executive, she said. She has been shadowing for the position, and I know she will do a great job. Mueller said she plans to continue to work with children as a physical therapist at MCRC. She said she would like to spend more time with her grandchildren and children in retirement. Midland is her home, and she doesn't plan to leave. She said she will be looking for ways to continue to serve the community. City confirms 2 cases, total up to 128, from staff reports. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting its investigation on 2 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 128. The 127th confirmed case is a male in his 30s who was tested by a private provider. He is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is community acquired. The 128th confirmed case is a male in his 30s who was tested by a private provider. He is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is travel-related within the United States. Of the 128 total patients, 47 are male and 81 are female. For the majority, 92, source of exposure was contact to known case, according to the Health Department website. 7 patients remain hospitalized and 57 have recovered. The age groups with the highest percentage of cases are 80+, 24, which is 18.6%, and 20-28. 22 cases, which is 17.2%.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, May 29, 2020. United Way of Midland, represented by Carrie Hennigan, President and CEO, left, and Wells Fargo, represented by Katrina Reed Ross, District Manager, Center, have collaborated to donate HEB gift cards for distribution to entry-level employees at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to a hospital spokeswoman, Roberta Solorio, Chief Human Resource Officer, Vice President of HR for Midland Health, is at right. Basin PBS to honor graduates. Basin PBS is airing Valedictorians in the Basin, 7 p.m. Thursday. This special program, which will honor area schools class of 2020, will feature valedictorians' speeches and other seniors' messages, according to a press release from the station. Districts and schools are Ector County ISD, Midland ISD, Greenwood ISD, Trinity School, Midland Christian School, Premier High School, and Midland Classical Academy. Sponsors are RID ID and HEB. Wonder Girls Summer Camp will be online. Crisis Center of West Texas is taking its 4th annual Wonder Girls Summer Camp online for Permian Basin girls who will be entering 5th through 8th grade. CCWTX will release a set of activities every Wednesday in July. Participants can complete the activities on their own schedule. The center has limited supplies and t-shirts to distribute to Permian Basin girls, according to a press release from the center. Supplies may be picked up on June 29. Time has not been set. To apply, go to bit.ly/WG2020-apply. Deadline is 6 p.m. June 19. Anyone who would like to donate so CCWTX can purchase extra supplies can do so at bit.ly/WG2020-donate. For more information, contact Elizabeth Texiera, Prevention Services Director, at elizabeth@ccwtx.org or 432-333-2527. PBALC needs volunteers. As the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center prepares to reopen for in-person and virtual classes, the nonprofit is looking for volunteers. The center is planning to host an in-person resume workshop for its student using the Google Applied Digital Skills resume class. The workshop is set for 2 to 4 p.m. June 25. Volunteers with experience in hiring are needed to critique the resumes and conduct mock interviews to help prepare participants for the job search, according to a press release from the center. The workshop will be limited to 5 attendees to maintain safe distancing in the building. The center will be disinfecting all surfaces before the workshop. Anyone interested in volunteering can contact Andrea DeJong at 682-9693 or ADEJONG at PBALC.org. Volunteer opportunities are available. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit www.mssconnections.org. Basin Dream Center for Orphans. Contact Abby Wiggum, Abby, A-B-B-E-Y, at basindreamcenter.org, 230-6588. American Red Cross, Virtual Volunteer Opportunities. contact Stacy Pickett at 425-7637. Midland Storytelling Festival. Contact Carol James, carol.james.52@gmail.com, 685-3876. Senior Life Midland. Contact Tracy Renton at 689-6693. Keep Midland Beautiful. Contact KMB at keepmidlandbeautiful.org. MISD serves summer meals. Midland ISD summer meal schedule is in effect. Breakfast and lunch meals will be available for grab and go 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at 11 locations, according to a press release from the district. Meals are available for any child 18 or under, or those who receive services from school. The locations are Bonham, Bowie, Bunch, Burnett, Dizavala, Rusk, Santa Rita, South, and Yarborough Elementary Schools, Fire Station No. 4, and Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park. MISD has served more than 405,000 meals during the COVID-19 related closure of schools, Victoria Beck, Director of Child Nutrition Services, said. Daily menus are available at midlandisd.net under Child Nutrition Services.
The Opinion Page. A guest view from the Dallas Morning News. National Guard will be needed in case of second wave. When dealing with crisis, be it a pandemic or any other significant threat, we believe it's best to meet it with overwhelming force. So it's with some alarm that we took the news last week that the Trump administration has moved to end the National Guard's service, helping states mitigate the damage caused by the coronavirus. Come June 24th, the more than 40,000 guardsmen deployed nationwide would face a hard stop and be told to head home. There is some evidence that President Donald Trump will grant a short extension. After a slew of lawmakers reacted negatively to the news, Politico reported that the administration is prepared to extend the deployments through July. We support that extension and call on state and federal lawmakers to look at what will be needed in the coming months to ensure there are no hiccups as we move to open our economy and work to ensure we can handle anything that comes our way, including a second wave if it comes to that. We recognize there is a cost to deploying National Guard, but given all of our tools, it's also among one of the most cost-effective ways we can respond to the challenge. Through the crisis, the National Guard has backed up health care workers, set up field hospitals, and stepped in to test patients themselves. They have worked to decontaminate nursing homes and help food banks. While, as of now, we may no longer need their assistance in creating field hospitals, the country is still nowhere close to managing the other tasks named, and we need all the support we can get. There is also something particularly inconvenient about June 24th to end these deployments. While on active duty, members of the National Guard are eligible for regular TRICARE health coverage. If they become inactive, they are only eligible for TRICARE Reserve Select, which does not cover pharmaceuticals and has higher copays, premiums, and deductibles. We'd rather see members of the Guard covered under the pandemic abates in case they contracted the virus while deployed. We'd also want to ensure that they had good health coverage in case they need them to handle a second wave later this year. And many members of the National Guard may be those facing job loss back home. Without the National Guard deployed, the Guardsmen will lose income and various other benefits, and our country will be at a greater disadvantage in our fight against COVID-19. In Texas alone, they have delivered personal protective equipment, restarted formerly closed hospitals and other medical facilities, monitored mobile testing sites, helped set up medical tents, and supported food banks. These are tasks that continue to be fundamental to flattening the curve and aiding our state and country. So we hope our local and federal government hear our plea. Keep the National Guard deployed. obituaries, and death notices. Opal Grace Harrison was born January 9, 1925 in Soper, Oklahoma, to John Wesley Draper and Zella Forbes. She passed away in Midland on May 27 while surrounded by her girls. She lived many places but landed in Midland, Texas at age 34. She was born into a very poor family and had many struggles as a young lady. She had 15 sisters and brothers. Her viewing will be held at Jesus Name UPC Church at 3110 West County Road 116 on Friday, May 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. Her funeral will be at 12 p.m. on Saturday, May 30th at the church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery at 3 p.m. Funeral services are under the direction of Ruella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.luellagarciapipkinfh.com. Our mother and grandmother, Patricia C. Zimmerman, passed away on May 23rd of natural causes. She was born Patricia Von Seal Cole on February 18, 1938, in Wichita Falls, Texas, to Henry Edward Cole and Anna Ruth Shirley. She lived in the area of Anson for most of her childhood. She graduated fifth in her class and went to business school before getting a secretarial job in Midland, Texas. Services will be held on Saturday, May 30th at Covenant Christian Church, 4055 Southeast Loop 286 in Paris, Texas, under the direction of Roden Pryor Funeral Directors, Dr. Steve and Diana Russell officiating. Family and friends visitation will be at 1 p.m., with the funeral service beginning at 2. The family requests any honorariums be directed in her name to Northwestern Baptist Church, 3901 Mockingbird Lane, Midland, 79707, or Covenant Christian Church. The family also plans a memorial service in Midland in November for all her friends and family of Midland and the surrounding areas who wish to attend. Ronaldo Flores, 76, of Midland, passed away Monday, May 25th. Services will be held at a later date. He is survived by his wife, Maria Elena, one daughter, three sons, five brothers, three sisters, eight grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren, nephews, nieces, and cousins.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, May 29th, 2020. Section A. Drive-through center closed. A decrease in the number of calls received from the triage center at the Ector County Coliseum to set up COVID-19 testing led to a decision Thursday to close down the center. During a Thursday Zoom news conference, Dr. Timothy Benton said, "Call center phones are not ringing." Both Benton and ORMC's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Rohith Saravanan, said it is still important to practice social distancing and that the COVID-19 crisis is not over. Saravanan, when asked if Ector County has seen a peak in cases, said there could be a possible rise in cases in a week or so following Monday's Memorial Day holiday. Benton said the area may not show a peak other than last week, but instead it may just be a series of ups and downs. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said that out of 1,267 tests, 97 have been positive, 1,120 have been negative, and 50 are pending results. MCH has 4 positives in the hospital, all in CCU, and 2 on ventilators. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that out of 418 tests, 17 have been positive, 386 have been negative, and 15 tests are pending. She said that there are 7 COVID-19 patients in the hospital with 2 more on the way, including another from a Crane nursing home. Nursing home testing in Odessa remained with one positive of a contract health care worker, and all residents tested last week by Odessa Fire Rescue were negative. Ector County's numbers show 152 positives, 105 recovered, 5 deaths, and 2,393 tested. Both Tippin and Brown indicated that visitor policies at both hospitals will remain restricted for the time being, and Brown stressed that both ERs are safe for patients seeking both COVID-19 and non-COVID-related care. Tippin said MCH may look at changing some restrictions next week, but that patient safety is number one, closely followed by staff safety. We are trying to handle patient visits through FaceTime and other means, he said. We just need everyone to stay safe and be patient. He said the Crane Nursing Home outbreak is a good lesson in how quickly the virus can spread through a facility, and also said his own mother was at MCH and couldn't have visitors either recently. Real heroes. NTO teacher named award winner. Damien Gaitan is a hero in the eyes of his students. Gaitan, who teaches Algebra 2 and Geometry at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, is also an academic decathlon co-sponsor, received the Synergy Hero Award Thursday. The award was a surprise. Along with Gaitan, Principal Gerardo Ramirez said the campus had three other finalists, Bernadette Barragan, who is the other sponsor of the academic decathlon team, Angelica Gutierrez, and Wesley Estep. Gaitan said he received a season pass for Synergy Movies and a basket of goodies. Today at 1 o'clock, we had a team of staff members waiting in Synergy. Synergy came through parade style with the fire truck, and they announced to us that the winner was Mr. Gaitan, and they gave him his season pass and his award, Ramirez said. I secretly told his family that he was the winner. I told them that yesterday, so then he was surprised by his family, and once he was announced, they came on by and surprised him and took a picture with him as well. It was neat. Gaitan said he was really surprised to win because the other three nominees are great teachers and very deserving. I'm flattered that I had a student or students thinking enough of me to nominate me, he said. He added that winning makes him want to work harder. I don't like the attention toward me, but if I know that it's coming from the students and they appreciate me, then it makes me know that the job that I'm doing is a good job and that it's worth it, he said. A native Odessan, Gaitan earned a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from University of Texas Permian Basin. Honestly, I always thought I would teach, but I always thought I would work maybe another career first, and maybe when I got older, maybe teach and then retire. But when I graduated, there really weren't that many available jobs for engineering, so I started substitute teaching in fall 2015, and then Mr. Ramirez at New Tech recommended maybe trying to be a math teacher and fill the position, so I got certified. He said teaching is a lot of work, but it's very rewarding because they are able to impact students. Gaitan said he also likes being able to show students from the area that they are capable of going into the STEM fields. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. I'm very appreciative to my kids, and I'm very honored and thankful that they nominated me for this award, and I really appreciate it, Gaitan said. He is married to Katrina, a special education teacher at Midland High School. Ramirez said Gaitan is just genuinely a great person. He cares about his kids, Ramirez added. The Synergy Heroes program is in its third year. The initiative was developed in 2018 as a way to give back to the community heroes, educating youth every day, information from Synergy said. It was important to Synergy to foster a space where we could recognize the wonderful work teachers are doing in and oftentimes out of the classroom. This year, like many, we faced a challenge with COVID-19 and whether we should proceed with the contest. Ultimately, we decided that now more than ever, our teachers should be recognized, the information said. The contest was opened in March with a call for teacher nominations. We are really lucky that we have a number of schools that partner with us and help to spread the word. We allow 4 to 6 weeks for students, parents, fellow teachers to nominate a teacher. Once we receive the submissions, we try to narrow it down to the top 3 teachers for each category. Then we open it up for the general public to cast their votes for who will win. This year, we had received over 50 entries from all of our locations. Double Blow Won't Keep Basin Down by Sam Waller. The Permian Basin has been dealt a double blow by the downturn in the petroleum industry, coupled with the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. But speakers for Thursday's State of the Basin webinar expressed optimism for a full economic recovery. It's hard to believe just 5 months ago we turned the calendar over on a whole new decade, said Don Evans, chair of the Permian Strategic Partnership and former Secretary of Commerce under George W. Bush. I am as positive and optimistic about the opportunity promised of the Permian Basin as I was 4 or 5 months ago. Ray Perryman of the Perryman Group said that while the region is looking at about 35,000 lost jobs compared to last year, the basin still represents 20% of the energy industry in the U.S. Perryman said the sudden onset of the current crisis is quite different from past downturns. This happened almost immediately, Perryman said. We lost 25% of world oil demand in a period of 30 days. The only way that can happen is if you shut down the world. If you go back to the 80s, it started in early 82 and lasted through 1986. It was 5 full years of disruption there, and then it was a smaller, slower comeback after that. It was a long period of time. This one happened very quickly. Perryman noted that several factors from the 1980s, from banking and real estate crises to Cold War politics, are no longer in play. If you look at today, before the pandemic started, we were in the longest economic expansion in history, he said. We don't have a lot of structural problems within the economy. Another advantage for the basin, Perryman said, is the amount of provable reserves that have yet to be exploited. Today, with new technology, we're producing twice the amount we produced at the peak back in 1973. We've taken out a little over 40 billion barrels of oil since the last century. We now know of probably 150 to 175 billion barrels of oil in proven reserves that are recoverable. In addition, Evans said, the Permian Basin is the lowest cost producing area in the world. I call the Permian Basin the largest secure supply of oil and energy, Evans said. You could just say it's the largest secure supply of energy in the world. When you step back and look at the future, and you realize what has happened over the last 4 or 5 years with respect to oil in the Permian Basin, if the Permian Basin was a country, it would be the 4th largest producing country in the world. We produce now about 40% of the oil in the United States. Dr. Billy Phillips, an epidemiologist with the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, spoke about the public health aspects of the pandemic, while Bradley Ewing, a professor with Texas Tech's Rawls College of Business, spoke on how investment in critical infrastructure will help speed up economic recovery and help shorten the up and down cycles during recovery. COVID-19 news. Ector County confirmed cases 152. Ector County negative 2,099 out of 2,393 tested with 142 pending, 5 deaths. Midland County 128 confirmed, 12 deaths. Texas 59,776 confirmed with 989,994 tested. Total Texas deaths 1,601. U.S. cases 1,698,523 total confirmed and 100,446 deaths. Texas Country Downtown. Entertainment Doctors will present Texas Country Downtown featuring Brandon Ryder with Sarah Hobbs and Logan Black Saturday at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main in Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. for VIP and 7 p.m. for general admission. There will be barbecue and a Texas two-step competition. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YC9874UQ or entertainmentdoctors.com. West Texas Blowout. The West Texas Blowout has been scheduled for July 17th and 18th at the Grande Stadium, 801 North Loop 250 West in Midland. Live entertainment will be presented by Coy Wetzel, Josh Abbott Band, Randall King, Tristan Mares, Duelo, AJ Castillo, Palominos, Ruben Ramos, Little Joe Y, La Familia, and Eric and Masor. In addition, a Garyo Memorial 3 Meat Cook-Off will also take place July 17th and 18th at the Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive in Midland. Cook-off entries and entry deadline is July 15th. Sponsorship opportunities are available. For tickets or more information, visit www.westtexasblowout.com. Woman charged with endangering 2-year-old with narcotics. An Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed that a woman was arrested after using cocaine, which resulted in the introduction of cocaine into the body of a 2-year-old child. Lacey Darlene Howell, 22, was charged with abandoning or endangering a child, a third-degree felony. On April 13th, officers were dispatched to the 4300 block of North Dixie in response to a welfare check to assist the Department of Family Protective Services, the affidavit stated. A DFPS investigator found drug paraphernalia while visiting the home of Howell, who is the primary caregiver of a 2-year-old child. On May 22nd, Child Protective Services reportedly contacted DFPS with drug tests collected from both Howell and the child, which was taken April 14th. Howell and the child both tested positive for cocaine. OPD reported that Howell's use of cocaine and the lack of oversight allowed the child to access the cocaine, which jeopardized the health, growth, and life safety of the child. Jail records show Howell was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center with a $7,500 bond Thursday and posted bail the same day. Reunion. The 2nd Indian Head Division Association, IDA, is searching for anyone who served in the Army's 2nd Infantry Division at any time. For information about the association and the 99th annual reunion from September 23rd through 27th in Kansas City, Missouri, visit www.2ida.org/99th-annual-reunion or contact Bob Haynes at 2IDAHQ@comcast.net or phone 224 225-1202. Wonder Girls Camp to be offered online. Crisis Center of West Texas is taking its fourth annual Wonder Girls Summer Camp online. In light of COVID-19, Crisis Center of West Texas is offering 5 weeks of online activities like coding, science projects, creative projects, CCWTX lessons, and more. Every Wednesday in July, from the 1st to the 29th, Crisis Center of West Texas, CCWTX, will release a new set of activities for Wonder Girls to do at home. Wonder Girls can do all the activities in one day, spread them out over a week, or whatever works for their family's schedule. This year, Wonder Girls is free for attendees. CCWTX will provide project supplies and a Wonder Girls 2020 t-shirt for a limited number of Wonder Girls. Families can pick up the 5 weeks of supplies June 29th at times to be determined to be used through camp. If all the spots fill up, campers can still participate. Crisis Center will provide a supply list instead of the supplies. Wonder Girls is designed for rising 5th through 8th grade girls. Other youngsters are welcome to follow along with the activities, but supplies are only available for girls in the Permian Basin who are entering grades 5 through 8 in fall 2020. Applications are due by 6 p.m. June 19th. You can apply at https://bit.ly/WG2020-apply. For those interested in supporting Wonder Girls and CCWTX's prevention education, $25 provides a set of camp supplies for an additional Wonder Girl and supports the Crisis Center's prevention education efforts year-round. To donate, visit https://bit.ly/WG2020-donate. For questions and information, contact Elizabeth Teixeira, Prevention Services Director, at elizabeth@ccwtx.org or call 432-333-2527.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.